Yabarati Yabrapare Avisa Sampudodake Aveshu Vedeshu Mamanasha Vijanaha. Okay, just read the translation and move on. All purposes that are served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. So the Vedas are the oldest books of knowledge in the world. They discuss architecture, medicine, physical sciences, fine arts, music, dance, poetry. So many thousands of texts, you know. And very sophisticated. But when the British were there in India, they wanted to cover all this and keep it for themselves. There's colonial arrogance everywhere. So now people are appreciating this. It's not like a bunch of savages and so on. The description is how to make batteries in the Vedas before Christ was born, like that. Yeah. And metallurgical accomplishments in metal making that people still can't accomplish, can't duplicate like that. But their main concern was not with this physical things like we're concerned with, but more like development of character and happiness. You know, happiness coming from within, like that. Yeah. I saw a television series, a special on Buffalo, New York. But what's his name? Frank Lloyd Wright, the architect, the famous guy. He was there for some time, actually got started there. So he had a whole thing of his whole life like that. And he went through a lot of emotional problems and everything else like that. And somebody was commenting, like an older lady who'd been like an associate, this and that. And she was saying, all these things happened, this and that, and so on. And she said, you know, I think what it comes down to in the end was he didn't really know that happiness doesn't come from the outside. It comes from within. And so he had, you know, different things in his life happen like that and so on. But that's the point, is to develop this internal, you know, perception and appreciation. And then you can situate yourself properly to the world, in terms of the world. You know? So the Vedas describe all this philosophically. And so all these different things in the Vedas, if you know what they're trying to accomplish, you know, okay, then you can do that without having to be confused by all these different things like that. You know? Okay, text number 47, today's text here. Karmani eva dikaraste ma paleshu kadachana ma karma palahetur bur ma te sangostva akarmani boliega. Karmani eva dikaraste ma paleshu kadachanan markama palahetu mate sangostha karmani. Karmani eva dikaraste ma paleshu kadachana Marakama palahe turbur mate palesu karmani. Karmani eva dikaraste ma palesu kadachana ma karma palahe turbur mate sangostva karmani. Karmani eva dikaraste ma paleshu kadachana ma karma palo hetur bur mate sangostva karmani. Harmony eva dikaraste ma paleshu kadachana Ma karma palo hetorbor. Mate sangostva karmani. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty. Doraye. But you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the result of your activities. And never be attached to not doing your duty. So in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna has a problem. All these things start with a problem, right? No problem, no program. Right? You need a problem. So what's Arjuna's problem in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita? Soul and the body.
He doesn't understand
that the soul is not
hurt in the body.
Well, maybe. Yeah. What do you say?
He doesn't want to fight and kill his relatives.
Yeah. But he wants to fight and kill his relatives to start with, right? Yeah. Any more commentary?
It's kind of, he's not sure whether to fight or not.
Okay. All right. Same thing? Yeah. 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 You can't figure whether he to be or not to be. to take arms against the sea of Kauravas, to die, perchance to dream. No, yeah, it's this. He has to in the beginning he wants to enjoy life in a legitimate fashion, in a legal fashion, right? His relatives have been causing him so much problem for so long, and really horrible, ghastly, you know, offenses. They tried to desnude his wife in public, you know. They tried to insult his brother and take away all their kingdom. So many things like they've tolerated for so long. So now he has a chance for righteous revenge and enjoy himself. Every year, you see the new movies that come out, there's always a few good revenge movies like that, right? Some teacher, some teacher, right, gets revenge for his students who've been harassing him for, yeah, that happens, like, you know, for, what's it called, what's the name of my famous one, but anyway, his students have been harassing him so long, and finally he gets a chance for revenge, or some poor housewife who's suffering, you know, and finally she gets a chance for revenge, or, you know, so Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam, it's very gratifying to, you know, vent your anger in righteous indignation against your tormentors. And so Arjuna is going to enjoy. He's going to enjoy, you know, harassing all these people and satisfying his wife. And my wife will be happy with me like that. Oh, yes. You know, she'll tie her hair up and say, oh, thank you, Arjuna. Yeah, okay. So it's not like bad, but it's still karma. Right? He wants to enjoy by getting some result, you know, in this material world. So Krishna takes him right in front of Arjuna and Bhishma, and then he sees, oh wow, by Krishna's arrangement, this is what it means. You know, for my wife to tie her hair up, because she's not a widow anymore, it means everybody else got to untie their hair, because they're all going to be, you know, have their husbands dead. You know? So at that point he realizes that to be a karmi, right, is not gratifying. You know, to try and seek for any fruit in this world. You know? Prahlada Maharaj tells Lord Nrisingadev, I've suffered heat and cold, you know, so many kinds of disturbance, honor and dishonor in this world to different lifetimes. But the most difficult suffering to bear is separation from people you love. It's like that. Or else you're attached to somehow or other. So he has to do that. He has to give up his attachment to Bhishma, Drona, and also even all his nephews, they're like, you know, little kids compared to him. You know, how can they even defend themselves against him like that? And then they may be my cousins, but they're my family like that, you know. I meant to say this. There's a book called The Maltese Falcon. You know this? By Dashiell Hammett. Maybe the most classic of all the detective novels, kind of, The Maltese Falcon. So it starts off, and he says, somebody killed my... He's a detective. You know, he says, I'm a detective. My name is so-and-so. You know? And somebody killed my partner. You know? When your partner gets killed, you got to do something about it. He may not have been a nice guy. You may not even have liked him, but he was your partner, and somebody killed him. and you got to do something about it. It's the same way. They may not be your cousins may not even be nice guys, right? You may not even like them, but they're your cousins, you know. See, all these things, he comes to his conclusion, is just it's not worth it, any fruit in this material world. So he has to fight with his family members over this whole material stuff. So what's the solution? Yeah, to become a gyani, to renounce all fruitive activities. But that's not going to work either. Why not? Huh? Yeah, identical with Hamlet. To be or not to be, that is the question. Self-precise. You know? Take arms against a sea of Kauravas, you know, to die, perchance to fight, perchance to die, to dream. Ah, there's the rub. Yeah? Because who knows what dreams will come after we have shuffled off this mortal coil. Gives pause to reflection. And the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with a paler cast of thought. Yeah? Yeah. I would count myself king of infinite space, bound up in a nutshell, if only I did not have bad dreams. Yeah? So you take your mind with you, right? And all these thoughts, ambitions, ideas, motivations, they go with you. And stuff. And you can't escape your karma. Hamlet's whole final conclusion is, he's supposed to, because it's identical theme, in regular preaching. He figures out, because of some special intervention, his uncle murdered his father and became the king. And then seduced his mother and married her within one day after basically how the guy was dead. Hamlet says that the cooked meats at the wedding feast the cooked meats at the funeral feast did but do double duty as cold cuts at the wedding feast. He wasn't dead at all. The same meat. So was it mourning and lamentation? No. And she said, "Oh, when you're dead, Srinivas, I'll cry for weeks and years. I'll never see the light of day again." You know, it's like, you know, any meat left over from any pakoras left over from the funeral, you can hit him up again for the wedding. Bye, Peru. Yeah, it's very intense. That's why he probably said you can teach Shakespeare in the Gurukula. And like that. He said, if you want to understand word power, read Shakespeare. Very intense, what is human nature and things like that. You know? That's the problem. He has to fight with his family members. So Hamlet tries to avoid the situation. His uncle tries to kill him. His uncle has him pushed off of a boat in the middle of the ocean, and the water carries him back up onto the shore, and the two assassins get killed instead by somebody else. So finally, his conclusion is, everybody has a destiny. Right. Even though it's roughly cut, it may not be so precise, but you got some kind of not over here, not over here, not over here, like that. And so all we can do is cooperate with that and play our part in the best way we can, like that. Yeah. So it's very similar. It's this verse right here. Bhagavad Gita gives more than that, but that's his conclusion. Because you can't avoid your destiny. You can't avoid your karma. So then what does he do? Can't be a karmi, can't be a gyani. I can't fight to enjoy in this world, and I can't really be peaceful just by renouncing this world. So what does he do then? Second chapter. O Govinda, I will not fight. But, and he says? Yeah, he says that. And so what does he say, though? What is that? Which Arjuna is going to? Yeah. It doesn't. I can't solve this problem. I surrender to you. I'm your disciple. Please instruct me. Yeah. It's really, it's essential. That's diksha. That's initiation. Taking initiation. Accepting Krishna as guru. So then Krishna says, he says, okay, he describes Sankhya, right? For the first half of the second chapter. That we aren't this body, right? I'm not this. Somebody very intoxicated. I mean, I identify with something. Identify with the electric clock in the bar, and a song like this. What is that? Or something. It was some big famous rock band. It was a really famous song back in the hippie type era. There was one guy. He was just sitting there, drinking his beer, and he said, went into a trance after half an hour like normal, watching the electric sign, the clock going around like that. So on. who it was, very famous group, very kind of philosophical thing like that. I'll talk about Buddha again and again. So anyway, you absorb the sense objects. I had this happen. Maybe you wake up in the morning or something, and then you become a little bit more intelligent, and you come to your senses. Come to your senses. Oh, yeah. So you're no longer absorbing the sense objects. Now you're just absorbing, now you're absorbing your senses, right? It's one step higher than being absorbed in the sense objects, and biting yourself or cutting your own foot, like that. So now you're, my senses. And then, by this analysis, his point is that we aren't the body. What are some of the examples that Krishna gives to prove we aren't the body? Changing body. Dehino shmin. Dehino shmin. Translation. Dehino shmin. We go from youth to boyhood to old age. And similarly, the time of death, we just leave this body. This is an example that Solomon uses, King Solomon. He's the patriarch for both the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims. And there's some evidence that Solomon was a Hare Krishna. So if Solomon goes down, they all go down. Because he had his boatyard on the Mediterranean, it was in the Red Sea. He had these peacock feathers and his stories. And apparently, he had contact with India, like that. So if Solomon goes, they all go down. Christians, Jews, the Muslims, they're all become Hare Krishna. So they're fighting that one. Solomon had nothing to do with India. So he gives the same example, and also in Shakespeare, I was going to write a play called "Do Lotuses Grow in the Avon?" Avon's a river that goes by his place, like that. Or Bombay Bill. Shakespeare meets some guy named Vyas, and they talk about their characters. Because so many parallels like that. So it's very, if you try talking in terms of classical studies, Shakespeare is one of the most classical things. You see, it's the same culture. So he says in a play, interestingly enough, titled "As You Like It," right? This is Bhagavad Gita as it is, as opposed to Bhagavad Gita as you like it. Right? Bhagavad Gita as you like it, as it is. So the play is called As You Like It. So things are happening, you see a certain thing, and one character says, "All the world's a stage, and the men and women therein, they have their entrances and their exits. And a man in his life plays seven parts. The infant, mewling and puking in his mother's arms." This is very old English like that. Okay. "The infant mewling and puking in his mother's arms. Next, the young boy with shining morning face and satchel making at snail's pace to school." Maybe you didn't go to school. You remember that, right? Going to school. Next, the young fellow. What is next? He is. Oh, yeah. Now he's starting to fall in love with the opposite sex, and he's describing writing poetry, describing his mistress's eyebrows. Or, "Your eyebrows are like the moon. Your nose is like as round as a banana," something like that. "Sighing like a furnace." Like that. Instead of Shakespeare, really, a few words like that. The next is the young warrior, bearded like the pard, like the leopard, bearded like a leopard. Full of strange mottos, brave sayings, even into the cannon's mouth. "Long live Boise!" Next is the justice, with a good cape on, full of wise sayings and modern instances. Okay. Then next is the older guy, his big manly pipes, now a mere whistle, and his skinny shanks, now too narrow for the wide world. And what's the last scene? Mere oblivion. So ends eyes, so ends teeth, so ends everything. They have illustrated books. They have nice illustrations for each of these, like that. So it makes powerful changing bodies exhibit like that. You think Shakespeare and things like that. And you see many people, we overheard, I always remember this, we had a Rathiyatra festival. It wasn't Rathiyatra, the festival of India, just across the river in Anne Morrison Park. Yeah. And Madhua, it was going on, he put this changing bodies exhibit. You have a big exhibit, like the size of this wall, showing like little baby, child, young adult, one after another like that, right next to the main pathway. And I saw people going by on their bicycles, kind of stopping, you know, and looking at them. You see them going like, you see them like, they're going like that, looking like that. Because it's so powerful when you see it all at once. You realize, yeah, I fit into that. That's where I was. That's where I'm going. And another time we had a small diorama. We were chanting in Santa Cruz in the street there, in the main street, all kinds of expensive gift stores and stuff. And one lady, it looked like one lady with her sister, and two girls went inside this big bookstore right in front of us, and one girl stayed outside. And she was about it was like that. So we're chanting, and this girl was like next to the diorama, changing bodies, singing. She was doing something, and I kind of listened like that. Whatever she was doing, she was going, Susie, me, mommy, grandma. The same thing too. It was very little child could understand, like exactly. But you get education like that, then you see, yeah, you know. So Krishna is trying to show us that we're the same person. You can actually realize this. I actually realized this one time, you know, before I ever became a devotee. Well, it's going to change, it's changing. But then I'm just the observer, you know. So if it changes, I still go on observing all these things. Yeah, yeah. So that's the second chapter, first half. Sankhya, right? Analysis. We're not this, you know, we're not these bodies. We're not these senses. We're not this mind, right? We're separate. They're changing, there's time involved. In the second half of the second chapter, he says what? Go back here.
So you got him. Turn back the page.
Yeah. About 36? Yeah. So the very, very end of, 39. Text number 39. Eshate bihita sankye buddhya yoge trimam shanu buddhya yukto yaya parta. This is page 111 there. Karma bhandam prahasyasi. Thus far I have described to you knowledge to you through analytical study. Thus far I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. Well, Sanapritta, when you act in such knowledge, you can become free. You can free yourself from the bondage of work. Yeah. So Prabhupada's giving a very, contextual or higher level translation here, right? It's probably drives strict Sanskrit scholars nuts. What to speak of Buddhists? So he's, so far I've explained Sankhya, now I'm going to explain Buddhi. If you study physics, the first thing they teach you is statics, right? Static relationships. And they start explaining dynamics, how these things are moving together like that. So the Krishna's done the same thing. Well, these are the relationships, the parts. Okay, now we're going to show you how they relate together when they move like that and stuff. So and after that, so far you've read what he describes as the qualities of this thing. What's it worth? Who can understand it? There's no loss in this path. And he's describing how wonderful this Buddhi yoga is. So this is the verse, and as far as I know, it's the only verse in the whole series which actually defines what is Buddhi yoga. Right? And so what is Buddhi yoga? There's four aspects. What is it? What is Buddhi yoga? Give me that. 47? Yeah. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, okay, but you are not entitled to the fruits of the duty, of the action like that. And it's two things. So that's pretty simple, right? You have a right to do your duty. For example, like horses, right? What's a duty of a horse? Yeah, carry things, transport people like that. And then he has a duty and he has so by making automobiles and things like this, you're taking his right away from him like that. And there's going to be some kind of weird reaction like that. He has a right to do that in society, in a position like that. You can't take away his duty. And so everybody has a particular duty, of a right to be a mother, a right to be a daughter, a right to be a son, a right to be a father, a right to be a student. You know, yeah, you can't do that. No, it's my right. I would do it. Okay, but what about the results of that? No, you have no right to claim the results of that activity like that. If you're a father, you have no right to claim, look, I raised you up, I fed you, I put you through school and everything else, now I'm old, you have to take care of me. Like that. No, I did it, and I have a right to do that. Yeah? But I'm not entitled to the fruits. It's a very strange idea, coming from a country where everybody is very fruity in many ways like that. Yeah? But you see, sometimes they have stories about some police officer or something who sacrifices the fruits and just does his duty because it's his duty. You know? And people feel it's very heroic. That very inspiring. Somebody fought just because it was the right thing to do, like that. Yeah. Never consider yourself the cause of the result of your activities. Never consider yourself the cause of. So what does that mean? Any kind of thoughts about that? Yeah. At least not the cause of the results. Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's Gobbledore, he said, my God, how many living entities are cooperating, bugs, insects, to make this whole world function? And you think that you're causing these things to happen. You can't even digest your lunch without, the help of, millions of bacteria, everything else, education. You start thinking like that, you realize, God, what am I doing, I caused all this, like that. So yeah, you should not think that you're the cause of the results. Yeah. And last one, kind of the exact opposite, right? Yeah, like that. Yeah. So it's very interesting. That's his Buddha Yoga. Basically, it's a position of neutrality, right? Yeah. Don't be involved in the senses of the senses, and don't be uninvolved in the senses. Right now, I'm reading this story, Wukong. It's a Chinese classic. It comes up, it takes about, 2 minutes for it to load in Microsoft Word. it's like 2 million, it's like 2,920,000 words, approximately. I don't know, God, how many pages it is. It's a big, epic. And so with all through it, the story, dramatic story, they keep having Buddhist philosophy come in. And it's exactly like this, You don't be attached to your duty, but don't be not attached to it either. What else is there? I even understand Buddha, grasshopper. But you've achieved your Buddhahood. Those who speak do not know, and those who know do not speak. Ah, soul. God is a circle with its center everywhere and no circumference. Okay, you understand? God is a circle with a center everywhere and no circumference. Then why do you call it a circle? But the whole idea, this, because what's the conclusion? Go to the very last verse here, text number 72, right? 272, right? After all these things, he talks about, this Buddha Yoga. Then after that he goes about, Aisha Brahmi Stiti Partha Nainam Prapya Vimuyate Stitvasyam Ante Kalaipi Brahma Nirvana Richati. This is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So what is the Sanskrit here for kingdom of God? Brahma Nirvana. not the Buddha, but his followers would turn over in the grave, or else their ashes would reassemble out of what's the word, frustration or something. And they heard this, translating Brahma Nirvana as the kingdom of God. But it's, one of the Buddha's most favorite phrases is nirvana, right? It's cessation of variety.
Literally extinguishing.
Okay, I've heard different explanations. One time before, from you and somebody else, like that. Nirvana. Blowing out like a candle? Okay, nirvana. So this is one of their most favorite phrases, nirvana. And it's right here in Bhagavad Gita, which we're saying occurred long before Buddha came along. You know? And this whole chapter is called Buddha Yoga. You know? So I don't know if Buddha is taking his, you know, whatever from this or whatever, but there's definitely a strong relationship between Buddhism. Because their whole point is this point of, you know, again, exactly the same thing Krishna is saying. Don't be a gross fool. You know? Don't just be stimulated by things that happen to you. Somebody says, you're stupid. I mean, I'm stupid. Like that. You're wonderful. Well, thank you. Like that, right? Or else, you know. No, don't just be, just react, right? You know, it's a knee-jerk reaction. Live your life, you know, live your life on a reflexive basis, just like, you know, God, you know. That's what a dog does, you know, or an animal, you know. He's telling him, don't be an animal, you know. Be intelligent, you know. And be intelligent. Come to Buddhi. Examine everything. You know, just stay detached. Remain neutral, like that. Look at the next verse, 48. You have a right to do your duty. You have a right, don't be attached to the results. Don't think you're the cause of the results. Yogastha kuru karmani.
Yogastha kuru karmani.
Sangam chakva dananjaya. Siddhya siddhyo samo buddhva. Samatvam yoga uchate. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Durena hi avaram karma. Buddhi yogat dananjaya. Buddhau sharanam manvicha. Kripana palahetava. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service. In that consciousness, surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their works are misers. So there's no comment of explanation of devotional service here. Buddhi yogat. You know, again, like that. Yeah. Prabhupada said, I've explained Bhagavad Gita in such a way that even a first-class fool can understand it. Right? So we still have a hard time understanding it, which tells us something about our intelligence. Okay. Yeah. So, because, you know, later on it will be obvious that's what he's talking about. You know, but here Buddha Yoga means just, you know, hooking up, linking up by using your intelligence like that. Always, you know, for example, one C. West Churchman, he was a famous philosopher at University of California eventually, and you met him. And he wrote a book called The Systems Approach, like that, you know. And he became famous, The Systems Approach to Analyzing Matter. And part of his thing was he went through the Bhagavad Gita, several books like that. And he told, for example, one time he had this experience that he was going on to the freeway and somebody kind of cut in front of him. And he became angry at them. And he said, and he thought, well, I wish I hadn't thought that. I wish I hadn't felt that, like that. And that's when he realized, yeah, there's this, you know, that's just my mind acting like that, you know. And he said he didn't care about what conclusion the Bhagavad Gita reached. He didn't care what conclusion any of these things reached. He was only concerned about their process of reaching it. You know? So he was a real jnani. You know? He went and saw him with the Tray Rishi and were talking to him. He was just so detached. Every single thing, he was like that just naturally. Probably was a Buddhist monk in his last lifetime. He would consider everything like that. He was saying like that. You know? Nothing would he accept just kind of like blindly like that. You know? So that's what Krishna is saying. You know? Again, we quote the Buddhist phrase, they say, you know, watch, see your life from 1 inch behind your eyeballs, like that, you know. Before, make sure that mind is engaged before tongue is in motion, right? Yeah. So there's many phrases like that, Buddhist phrases like that, you know. And it's good, nothing wrong with it. Prabhupada says we're totally in favor of the Buddhist cult if they actually follow their basic principle, which is ahimsa, like that, ahimsa. But he says nowadays modern Buddhists, usually they eat anything in the ocean but the junk, anything on the land but the rickshaw, and anything in the air but the kite, you know. You know, it's indiscriminately causing these problems like that. You know, not all of them, but it's become a very common practice. They're not following their basic principles, you know, which is, you know, ahimsa. Prabhupada said it was Buddha's mission to establish this nonviolence. He always gives the example of karate. Yeah. Karate means empty-handed, You know, kara, tava, kara, kamala. Yeah, it means empty-handed, like that. Because Buddha said, no weapons, right? So they figured, oh, okay, we learn to kill with our hands. Ha ha, we fool Buddha. Ha ha, Buddha, no weapon. Ha ha, you know, like that. Yeah? That was why, exactly. You know? Because obviously, if you got a sword, it's much easier to use a sword than just to try and kill some guy with your fist. Like that, yeah. So, you know, very much tied into, I think, somehow or other, is an interesting thing that tied into this whole thing of Buddhism. And again, this is all that Krishna talks about here. You know, before he said just labao, labao, subao, subao, suba, subao, subao, labao, labao, right? Whether there's some profit or not, some gain or not, some auspiciousness or inauspiciousness, just do your duty, like that. And now he's going on basically saying the same thing here. Any questions or comments about this? It's good. Yeah.
Many people who follow the business.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I was talking to a Buddhist monk one time, and he said weapons are bad. Actually, Hansaru was talking to him. He held his guns. You know, monk would say, no, weapons are bad. And Hansaru was preaching. Well, no, it isn't. But it's whether how you use it, like that. And yeah, it's a nice discussion. But that's the point. Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah. Text 49. Yeah. That's what I think at this point Prabhupada's putting that in, for as I can tell. No. Because he here, for example, yoga sta kuru karmani, you know, equipoise in your duties, give up all attachment, success, failure, and become situated. Some of them is yoga. Yeah, it's Sanskrit. Because actually the next chapter is called Karma Yoga, like that. And there, because usually we think in the West, you know, it's good karma, it's bad karma, man, this kind of thing or something like that. It seems like action and reaction in a very simple fashion like that. But karma is much more sophisticated than that, really. You know, we have this very mechanistic, atomic idea from Newton. We're all atoms, molecules, and very simple mechanistic reactions make up the world. There's nothing more complicated than that. Noam Chomsky, famous linguist, he was criticizing people because he wanted to break everything down to like glottal stops. Like you'd go like, gah, 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 or something, you know. That your nervous system was made up of this collection of little like, things like that. And those somehow or other, you know, over evolution formed words and those formed ideas. And it was this whole reductionistic thing like that. So he was criticizing them, you know, and saying well, there is like an irreducible complexity. You know, irreducible complexity. And Sataputta uses the same phrase. And back about the time, actually Harvey Cox, we had this Congress in Bombay in 1984, the first World Congress for the Synthesis of Science and Religion. Many Nobel laureates there. So Harvey Cox, who was a theologian from Harvard, famous guy, he did the keynote address. Bite you. He made the keynote address for the whole Congress. And he said, it's just such a, you know, such a big topic you can't possibly cover in one address, so no one's going to be able to criticize me for not doing it properly. So he called it the history of science and religion, a lover's quarrel, like that. It sounds like, what kind of stupid thing, you know? But actually he carries it off very well. And he makes his presentation, a small garland at the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna on the 500th anniversary of Lord Chaitanya, like that. And so he goes through the whole history, and he points out that sometime before Newton, in the history of Western science, there was this battle between the mechanical philosophers and the chemical philosophers over whose view of nature would dominate, like that. And the chemical philosophers lost, like that. And so the mechanical philosophers' view of nature became the predominating idea. Yeah. And the mechanical philosophers. And so the chemical philosophers never developed their particular thing. They had to go in the toe to follow behind the mechanical philosophers. So we know their philosophy as alchemy. Oh, it's a crazy thing like that, you know. But they believed in certain irreducible units that you just couldn't break things down anymore. You can take the saddle off the horse, you can take the bridle out, you can take the shoes off, but you can't break the horse down anymore. And you haven't got a horse, like that. And they were always kind of laughing at the mechanical philosophers with this obsession with reductionism. You know, seconds, milliseconds, microseconds, what else we got? Picoseconds, nanoseconds. How small you want to get, like that. So they were kind of criticizing that. It was one of their principles. Another principle was that everything had a meaning. Everything in life had a meaning to it. Whereas the mechanical philosophers said, no, it's all meaningless. It's all this interaction like that. And the third principle was macrocosmic and microcosmic resonances. That I have a hand because there's a resonance with the universe. Something, and we say that's exactly the same thing. Our hands are symbolic representations of Indra. And when Indra goes to sleep, your manual abilities just don't work. You all thumbs, like that, and so on. So the hearing is a incarnation of the Digvijayas. So it's this echo. When I'm studying different kinds of we call them mudras, yantras, mantras, there's an echo. It goes all the way up to Indra's throne like that. So irreducible complexity, significance in nature, and macrocosmic and microcosmic resonances. And we agree with all these things. But science took us other direction like that. So all came down to this right. So karma, we usually think just action, reaction, but it's much bigger than that. For example, you get a phone call from somebody and they say, hey, Dr. Gupta, remember we met at that party at the university a couple weeks ago? And you say, oh, yeah, I remember you. Talk a little bit. Yeah. So I'll tell you what, I work for the small airlines, ABC Jet Airlines, and they're going to be bought out next week by United Airlines. So the value of the stock is just going to shoot up like anything. Now, as an employee, I can buy like so much stock on the margin like that. Of course, you got to pay it off within 1 week, but that won't be a problem because we'll get that. But it has to be an employee. So like if you can get a lot of money together, telling a few people like that, then I can buy the stock and we're going to make it become really rich like that and stuff. But it has to be a secret because it has to be an employee like that. So your wife's out of town, so you sell all of her jewelry. You call your father overseas and say baby needs a heart transplant. There's money. You steal like $25,000 from the payroll from your work, and you get $100,000 together, and you give it to the guy. And sure enough, the ABC jet is bought out by United Airlines. The stock goes from 25 cents a share to $2.50 a share. Oh my God! Now I'm a millionaire. So the guy doesn't call you. And after some time, your wife's coming back and wondering where your jewelry is, and wondering why your father-in-law is calling about the baby's health and the payroll's coming. So you call the guy and everything else, and he says, "I don't know you. You never gave me any money. What is this? Some kind of rascal trying to." And so your wife divorces you, your in-laws beat you, some of you go to prison, you become an alcoholic, all these things, you die. Okay. Karma. Next lifetime. The guy who robbed you, he's born again, and he has a nice life, living well, like that. And nice family, wife, children, a very nice son, he really loves so much, so attractive. But when he's about 4 years old, 5 years old, the little boy dies. And the man is just like somebody just ripped the heart right out of his chest. He suffers the entire rest of his life in separation because that child was so attractive. So you, with that child, come back to get your revenge. Like that. So you never know who your family members are. Could be your worst. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yep. You put it that way, it makes a lot more sense. Could be your worst enemy. Come back to get revenge. Yeah. So it's complicated, right? Then beyond that, then it naturally falls into these four divisions: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. That's karma. So Brahma karma, Swabhavajam, right? Kshatriya karma, Brahma karma, Vaishya karma, Kshatriya dharma, Vaishya dharma, Varna ashram dharma. The only difference, I think, is that dharma tends to apply more towards the qualities and karma towards the activities like that. Right? So he's telling him, do your karma. I mean, it means do your duty in a sense like that, karma yoga. And later, in Chan 330, Bhagavad Gita 330, this is my boss here. Mayi sarvani karmani. Sanyasya dhyatma chetasa. Nirasir Nirmamo Bhutva. Yudyashva Vigita Dwara. Same thing again. Same thing again. Vritti knowledge is spiral, right? Same points again and again, but with more depth, more perspective. Whereas our Western idea of knowledge is you learn everything one time, you go forward, never you go back. But no, this is repetitive. You know? So same thing again. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desire for profit, with no claims of proprietorship, free from lethargy, right? Don't be attached to not doing your duty. Fight. Right? Same point. You know? But especially, Mayi Sarvani Karmani. What does that mean? What do you think? What do you think? Mayi. What is Mayi? What do you think Mayi means? For me, Sarvani? Sarva? All. Karmani? Dharma activities, yeah. So Sanskrit's very easy. It's a little bit advanced, you see. You know, Mayi, Sarvani, Karmani. You know? And this is the first time in Bhagavad Gita, almost. One time, a little bit in the second chapter. First chapter, he mentions like Matpara in terms of me, but it's not very detailed. But here's this very clear. Do your karma, right? But not sacrifice the results to me, like that. Fourth has been this, do your duty, because it's your duty. But now he's giving him some object like that, because we all want to love somebody. We all want to serve somebody. We're just not satisfying doing it for this impersonal reason. It's better than doing it for, you know, for a personal motivation like that. And it's better than not doing it. Right? But it's not as satisfying as doing it for Krishna, like that, transcendental person like that. So the first time, I think, really in Bhagavad Gita where it's clear like that. Yeah. Yeah. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge his duties as if in military discipline. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna, because that is the constitutional position of a living entity. Living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of a living entity is to become subordinate to the desire of the Lord. Right. So you can't be happy unless you can actually feel you're serving God. Right? Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? I've seen, you know, Nitya Sundar is a psychiatrist, so I listen to this. He has these tapes he has to listen to stay current in his like his job like that. It's a big bag of them, so I listen sometimes. And even the most atheistic, you know, materialistic psychiatrists basically all agree that you're not going to get off alcohol, you're definitely not going to stay off of it unless you have some spiritual component. the word is like repugnant to their mouths. You know? But they say it. It's just a fact. You know? Now, we all know it's bogus. There is no God, everything else. But these idiots, you got to let them, religion is the opiate of the people. So you got to let them believe there is a God, there is a spirit. Otherwise, they won't be able to maintain themselves like that. You know? And so Alcoholics Anonymous is based on that. We saw one of the biggest, Professor Reese Jones. He's one of the people in charge of the drug abatement program for the University of California, like that. And he said the same thing. He said all these other programs, like Narcotics Anonymous, all of these, practically speaking, he said they're all really coming off of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's the only ones that really work, really. And he said it's not really a chemical problem or anything else. It's really a social or a spiritual problem. He wasn't opposed to the word, but you can see in his community, he never used the word in his community. It was like, you know, if you have to say supercalifragilistic expialidocious. It's a spiritual problem, so on. So that what it comes down to, you're just not happy without that spiritual component in life, dovetailing your activities, feeling secure that Krishna will take care of me, and that Krishna appreciates what I'm doing, like that, Okay. So any questions? Yes, sir. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
And she came to the conclusion that they weren't compatible.
Oh, yeah?
Because she said that the whole AA program is meant to help you feel like you're in control of the situation.
Oh, no.
And you ultimately, she said you have to give it up and then ultimately regain that sense of
way, Baba. No way. You know, when you go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings your whole life, and you talk. It's amazing. They have their sadhana, a certain program like that, one thing after another. At a certain point, then they all give testimonials like that, you know. And you know what they say? You know, hello, my name is R. Gupta, and I'm an alcoholic. Except every time, they usually use first initial and last name. Last initial. My name is Robbie G., and I'm an alcoholic. My name is Huber H., and I'm an alcoholic. That's the first thing they say every single time. Every time, you know. I'm an alcoholic in recovery. The guy may have been sober for 25 years. They give him medals like that, you know, for how many years he's been sober. 25 years, they still identify themselves as an alcoholic in recovery. You know, they say the second you think that you're free from alcoholism, you're a target, high prime target. So there's no. And I've heard you go there, you know. You're never going to get free from it unless you get a higher power. They don't say what it is like that. They're not opposed at all to any kind of religious groups. They're all like Catholic alcoholic groups or like, you know, Pacific, you know, groups like that. Vietnam War veterans. There's a Hare Krishna alcoholic group in Los Angeles. You know, most of them are Vietnam War veterans. But, so they, you know, again, that's the whole thing. You know? So, you know, I guess, you know, misunderstood the whole thing. Anyways, the big book is the big book. It's the one of the whole process like that. But as far as I know, again, it was very clear that this thing is, you know, you're... That's the major cause of fall down is thinking you're independent and you can control your life without the help of a higher power like that. Yeah. Yeah. And at the end, everybody hold hands in the end. And the final thing is they all say together, keep on coming back. It works. It works. Keep on coming back. It works. It's like, no, it's so similar to our sadhana in many ways like that, the thing we're doing in bhakti yoga. You know? Because that's it. It works. It's a certain process. He's describing this. Yeah. Okay. Yes, sir. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean. Being a karmi or being a gyani, which is easier.
So,
I don't know, but I mean, generally speaking, I mean, you know, if you tell somebody, look, this, I want you to sit here for 8 hours a day and do nothing, or else you want to and help these guys, you know, washing windows in the cars. Everyone's going to say, I'd rather, like, you know, do something, right? Yeah, it's very difficult. There's so many stories about that, right? How difficult it is not to do anything. Yeah? So, yeah. Because here, that's kind of the point, because this neutral position is this, because in the beginning you're motivated by things which only cause you distress, so after a while you don't want to be motivated by that. You learn your lesson. You know, I don't want to be motivated to do my work because I get this, I get that. These things are always causing me problems, you know. So better just to do it because it's my duty and some relief. You know, why do you do this? Because it's my job. You know, why do you serve your husband? Because he's my husband, like that. Because he's going to give me that, give me this, give me that. But it never makes me happy when I exploit my husband. You know, use my feminine potency to get these things. Do I do it? Yes, he's my husband. I'm like, why the wife? Yeah. But then again, there's no motivation. So the higher thing is in Krishna, when Prabhupada says, what makes a devotee, you know, at work. He says, the devotee is motivated when the puris puff up when you're cooking them. And they often say, Krishna smile. That's what makes the devotee smile. You feel happy. It's a constitutional relationship like that. So then we're motivated then, you know, by Krishna's reaction. That's called vibhava, right? The basic stimulus. Yeah. Without that, there's no motivation. You just remain in neutral position, the best, detached. Vibhava means Krishna's smile, Krishna's beauty, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's heroism, Krishna's intelligence, all these things, right? And they stimulate us, and then we react by clapping or, you know, joining the fight, you know, like that. Anubhava. Like that. And it goes on and on with more detail, like that. Look, there's a lot of medicine. Yes, this is the first time he's asking. He just came to one program on the 3rd. You were chatting someplace on the 3rd. Well, I guess he went out in the street. Yeah, yeah. He got a card and came. So it was a result from your Harinam program like that. This guy came. Yeah. He's heard some Bhagavad Gita and now he's getting prasadam. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the point then, is that we get our stimulation, you know, from Krishna. He's smiling. It's a very real experience. I mean, you're cooking an offering, work hard, put it on the altar, and you look up and Krishna's, you feel he's happy, you know. Or else he's not happy, and you get motivation from that too. No, I better, it's right. I'm not acting properly. You know, I should be ashamed of myself. You know? And then when Ramachandra, when he would chastise somebody, it describes the person would like sincerely change, he would just really forget. That's it, it's finished. No grudge or anything like that. For all these persons, you know, Rondu was forgotten. He actually sincerely, you know, apologized. Yeah. Yeah. It's okay? Yeah. Yeah. So what can you think? When you get in the mode of goodness, there's no motivation. But then there is. It's finer. It's finer, it's longer, and it's maybe even more intense. It's more profound. Like that. If you get in the mode of goodness, you don't feel, what am I going to do? But then as you get there, you start to become slow, your intelligence forms, and you become, you know, motivated by a much more broad, deep, you know, energy, and this passionate energy of eating lots of soybeans and, you know, or drinking, you know, drink a cup of coffee, you know, and you're working. But just how long does it last? You know? And you crash. You know? But if you understand why you have to do this, what the purpose is, how it's like, you know, beneficial for people, then you can work for years on some project like that, you know, intelligence like that. I told you the story of the bricklayers. Remember that story? An Englishman sees 3 guys doing the same thing. And he asks the first guy, what are you doing? The man says, can't you see, you damn fool, I'm laying bricks. Says, okay. He asks the second guy, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm making money, take care of my family. Okay. He asks the 3rd guy, and they're all doing the same thing. Yeah, what are you doing? He says, oh, it's very interesting. We're building a great cathedral. And today we're making the wall that goes behind the altar. In a few days, the marble masons will come and put the marble here. And my children are very small now. But when they're bigger, I'm going to bring them here and show them how I helped to build this great cathedral. So they're all doing the same thing, right? But the motivation is just, is different like that. You know? That's the whole thing, is an investigation of motivation. It's the whole point of Bhagavad Gita. So right in this point, you know, he's saying just this. Be free from these external motivations that can be detached from this external motivations of the senses and sense objects like that. Yeah? And that's okay, but that's, you know, you can keep that. He says you'll go to Brahma Nirvana. Yeah, whatever that, you know, it kind of sounds like, you know, kind of like a, you know. Prabhupada says the impersonal realization is like waking up in the morning in Boise, Idaho, and there's nobody in the world but you. You can do anything you want to. You can drive cars, eat ice cream, go to the movies. You know, anything you want to do. You know, there's nobody there. You know, it's okay. It just sounds nice. You know, for how long? How long do you think it'd be fun for? A couple hours. Yeah, probably by the end of the day. You know, yeah, kind of boring like that. But you know, that's the point. That's what it's like. There's nobody there like to bother you. You know, so you know it can. Anyway. Peaceful, you know, it's better than suffering. You know? So I think in the 3rd chapter, he really begins to start talking about Mayi Sarvani Karmani. Do your duty, your Kshatriya Karma, your Brahmana Karma, do it for me. Like that. But in the 4th chapter, he wants, who are you? Well, he starts to explain for the first time how he's transcendental, how he's the cause of all causes, how he incarnates, like that. Then he describes some different systems about how to stay connected with him through yoga, through activities, through this and that, like that. You know? It's kind of. And then he comes back, you know, he comes back, you see there's a whole development in Bhagavad Gita to coming to this conclusion like that. You know, looking at it from different angles like that. And finally you see, yeah, sarva dharman, paritya dya, mamikam, sharanam braja. Ahantam Sava Papyo. See, all he's offering basically is moksha. By the end of Bhagavad Gita, all he's ever really offering is, you know, moksha. Papyo, liberation from simple activities. Papa says that Bhagavad Gita is basically for getting out of the material world. Yeah? Like that. Then after that, what happens? Right? After you get out of the prison, right? You know, then what happens? Okay, that's, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam. You need a couple more verses to finish off this section. Okay, so do your duty, don't be attached to the results. By this activity, you'll keep all sinful activities far away. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their activities are the misers. Number 50. Buddhi yokto jahati ha ube sukrita duskrite tasmad yogaya yujashva yoga karma shukaushalam. A man engaged in devotional service, buddhi yoga, rids himself of both good and bad reactions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for your yoga, which is the art of all work. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. And after that, he's going to talk about going beyond all the fruitive activities of the Vedas. So he just one purport here. The liberated living entities belong to that place where there are no material miseries. Bhagavatam 10.14.58 says, Samashritya ye pada palava palavam mat mahatpadam punya yasho morarehe vavam budir vatsa padam param padam 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 yad vipadam na tesham. For one who has accepted the boat of lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and his famous as Mukunda, or the giver of mukti, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in the calf's footprint. Padam Padam, or the place where there are no material miseries, where Vaikuntha is his goal, not the place where there is danger at every step. Owing to ignorance, one does not know that this material world is a miserable place where there is danger at every step. Out of ignorance only, less intelligent persons try to adjust to the situation by fruitive activities, thinking that the resultant actions will make them happy. They do not know that no kind of material body anywhere within the universe can give life without miseries. The miseries of life, namely birth, death, old age, and disease, are present everywhere within the material world. One who knows his real constitutional position as the eternal servant of the Lord, and thus knows the position of the personality of Godhead, engages himself in transcendental loving service of the Lord. Consequently, he becomes qualified to enter into the Vaikuntha planets, where there is neither material, miserable life, nor the influence of time and death. To know one's constitutional position means to know also the sublime position of the Lord. One who wrongly thinks that living in his position and the Lord's position on the same level is to be understood to be in darkness and therefore unable to engage himself in devotional service of the Lord. He becomes a Lord himself and thus paves the way for a repetition of birth and death. The one who understands that his position is to serve transfers himself to the service of the Lord. At once becomes eligible for Vaikuntha Loka. Service for the cause of the Lord is called Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga. Or in plain words, devotional service to the Lord. So, one time I was coming back from, I was looking for master charge. I just moved in the temple. I was living in the temple, but I was still working. I was looking to swing shift from 4 o'clock in the afternoon till midnight. Usually we got off early. So I was coming back to the temple, and the temple was in the mission district, which is this real heavy, area with lots of, clubs and, women dancing and bars and all this stuff. It's a really heavy, intense area. Dead rats in the street and people urinating in front of the thing, in front of you. They were really bad, stuff. And the temple was like this, light there. It was incredible. And they closed the temple. It was just incredible. It was just descended like that. So we were there. I was coming back at night. And some Latino guy was you know, kind of walking on the street at about 10 o'clock at night. He looked really just depressed, like a little intoxicated a little bit. Like he lost his job or something, came home and had a fight with his wife and slapped her or something and left the house and went out and got drunk. And I was just like, you know, it was just in hell. You know? So just spontaneously I said, you know, don't forget God. I, you know, the words came out of my mouth. You know? He was a Catholic guy probably. So suddenly I said that, he was kind of like nodded his head and like, you know, it's like, yeah, I have a supreme friend who will always help me like that and stuff like that. Oh, yeah. You know? So we forget this. Right? But as soon as we remember that I'm not the enjoyer, my first temple president, Bhaktadas, he got initiated and he asked Prabhupada what his name meant. Prabhupada said, your name is Bhaktadas. It means you are the servant. He says, the more you think you are the servant, the more you will think you will become happy. The more you think you are the master, the more you will go to hell. So in every situation, you, immaturely speaking, if you approach this to become the master, you go to hell. But if you approach it to become a servant, you know, everything works out, you know, for the better like that. One black general, lady, you know, big girl, she says, service to other people is the price you have to pay for occupying space in this world. Now, well, it's just as you're here occupying space, you owe other people service. But that's kind of, that's a very Kshatriya, you know, heroic attitude towards life like that. But same thing. Her life, you can imagine what kind of life she lives. You know, everybody should try to serve everybody like that. Even not as a devotee, right? Still, her life must be something very, you know, very satisfying. You know, so, he's saying here, we understand our constitutional position, you know, and then engaging in the service of the Lord, and automatically, you know, everything's okay. It's okay? Okay, so next week is text number 52. He's going to talk about the 40 activities of the Vedas. So, Paul Podke.
Right now?
That's it? Okay. Okay, it's okay. Hare Krishna.